Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of February 2018. Guys, you're wonderful. You're a masterpiece. You're beautifully made. Important to people because you're important to me. Highly favored by your creator. Whether that is a god or by the laws of averages and physics working in tandem, you're thirsty for knowledge and addicted to wonder. You, my friend, are an oddball. And here on this show, your family, and we are one. This is episode 50 of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. Well, it's Valentine's. Well, in a couple of weeks anyway. Just want to run it out there to you guys. There's no greater love in this world than the love you show me when you hit that old subscribe button, when you share the show and leave a comment. It helps grow what I'm doing. And what can I say? Without you guys, I'd just be that lonely guy at the bar who has no one to talk to on Valentine's Day. Just some creepy guy hanging out in his closet. It's true. It's true. Let me get a hold of myself here. I guess I'm getting emotional because Valentine's Day is my birthday, too. That's right. I'm a Valentine's baby. It's very true. So, yeah, for my birthday, I'd love for you guys to subscribe to this podcast and, let people know about it. Share it. Do you like the podcast? Do you not like the podcast? Won't you let me know? Drop me an email at jonc.mallard, M-A-L-L-A-R-D, at hotmail.com. That's my personal email. Drop me a line. Maybe you got a comment about the show or about some of the stories, something like that. Maybe you got some ideas of how to make the show better or some ideas about what you really, really love about the show. Just let me know. Some feedback would be really, really awesome. Once again, I have no idea who's listening to the show right now until you drop me a line and let me know who you are. Things have been going really great out my way. I hope they're going good at yours. You know, this winter has been really strange in Newfoundland. It's been kind of warm, unseasonably warm. Like one minute we're having like minus 10, minus 15 degrees Celsius and snowstorms and stuff. And then the next day it's like plus 8 and there's no snow on the ground. It's been really, really strange. And one thing I've noticed is, my God, there's so many people who are sick. Everybody's sick. My whole family for the last month have been sick in my house. My two kids, my foster child, my wife and me. Just been a rough month that way. And I kind of blame the weather. I'm like a crotchety old man shaking his fist at the sky saying, "Hey, why can't you keep your globe warming to yourself? Hey, we're all sick and stuff." But, all jokes aside, I am feeling a lot better. And I'm hoping you guys are feeling good too. And wherever you're to in the world, winter, we still got another while yet. So what are you going to do? Well, you're going to jump on, your mobile device. And you're going to download the show. You're going to share it with your friends. You're going to let people know about it. That'd be awesome. I know what I'm going to be doing. I'm probably going to be hiding from the cold weather, listening to various podcasts. I got about 10 on my Podbean app. Actually, I've kind of favorited to just jump in there and like it. Because as soon as you subscribe, you always get the update of when the next episode is out. So it's pretty awesome. Speaking of Podbean, there's been some issues with Podbean lately. And just throwing this out there to everybody there, who's actually into this stuff. as much as I am, who actually downloads. Remember, guys, sometimes these things happen. These pod, engines and stuff like that. I mean, sometimes they go down. And there's no doubt that Podbean was down. My show was a little bit late going up. I'm thinking it's still going up on the first, but I'm actually going to put this show into, their system a couple of days beforehand. So if this show is late and is not out on the first, there's your reason why. Podbean was down. But, what can they do besides apologize and carry on with life, so to speak? Oh, my God. Is anybody else as confused by this Ugandan Knuckles thing as much as I am? Like, have you heard this? People just saying, can you show me the way? Everywhere you go, you hear this, can you show me the way? Well, apparently, this actually comes from, the bowels of the internet. It's got to do with this game called VR Chat, where this guy took this character called Ugandan Knuckles, rendered him into 3D, and then took a line from this crazy Ugandan movie that was available on YouTube. I can't remember the name of it now, but anyways, one of the quotes is, can you show me the way? And it's just a ridiculous movie. And anyway, this became a meme, and now it's everywhere. So I walked to the mall the other day with my little girl, and held the door open for this older lady. She must have been in her 40s, and she looked at me and she said, ha ha ha, can you show me the way? And laughed. And I was just like, what the hell is going on? never ceases to amaze me how weird this world is. Which, pretty much is a great segue into the paranormal news for the month of February 2018. Let's get her going. Okay, so there's an unsolvable exam question that stumped the internet. And this is really strange and probably the cruelest thing I've ever heard done in an elementary school. So just hear this out. A question recently posed to primary school students in China has left social media users scratching their heads. Just about everyone will remember coming up against a particularly difficult question during a test at school, but this one aimed at 11-year-olds in China just about takes the cake. The question asks, if a ship had 26 sheep and 10 goats on board, how old is the ship's captain? If the answer is eluding you, then you're not alone. The question has since made its way onto social media, where internet users across the world have been struggling to make sense of it. As it turns out, however, the question is inherently unanswerable. According to educational officials, it was included in the exercise in an effort to highlight critical awareness. Some surveys show that primary school students in our country lack a sense of critical awareness in regard to mathematics, the Chongqing Education Department wrote in a statement. As for the actual age of the ship's captain, however, one Weibo commenter actually came up with a plausible answer and is all to do actually with the weight of the animals on the ship. In China, if you're driving a ship that has more than 5,000 kilograms of cargo, you need to have a possession, a boat license for at least 5 years, they wrote. The minimum age for getting a boat's license is 23, so he's at least 28 years old. He took a stab at it. That's just cruel. That's just cruel. Kids should be having fun, man. They shouldn't, they should learn, yes, but you can't be stumping them with stuff like that. Unanswerable questions. That's just cruel. they should be home playing some awesome games, like some of my favorite games, DuckTales for regular Nintendo and pretty much every Mega Man game ever made, because let's be honest, those games are mega awesome. And what did all these games have in common? They've got one of the craziest developers on the planet behind them, called Capcom, of course. I mean, Capcom is awesome. And you know what? They got a new game coming out soon, okay? And they've got this crazy promotional thing going on that's actually paranormal news worthy. And I'm going to shout out to Capcom because I love them so very dearly. They've been a part of my life since I was a little boy and continue to be. Capcom is offering $70,000 for proof of monsters. The video game developer and publisher is looking for evidence that monsters exist in the real world. As part of its promotional campaign for the release of a new game, Monster Hunter World, Capcom has teamed up with cryptozoologist John Downs to come up with this list of real-life monster legends. A prize of $70,000 is on offer to anyone who can prove that any of these is actually real. Speaking to the world's leading real-life monster hunter, John Downs, we were inspired to reopen investigations into a select list of the top 10 beasts, setting a huge bounty to really encourage people to get back on hunting for evidence, said Capcom's senior PR manager, Laura Skelly. The list of eligible creatures includes Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Mongolian Death Worm, the Chupacabra, the Flying Snake of Namibia, the Yeti, the Yowie, and the Cornish Owlman. Much like in the new Monster Hunter World game, we thought it was only right that the scale of the reward fit the task at hand, Skelly wrote in the press release. And once again, this is why I freaking love Capcom. I mean, they're just so awesome. all their games are amazing anyway. And, you know, there you go. $70,000 if you can prove it. You know what the difference between this and Randy's prize is? This prize actually exists. Okay. On to the next thing. Zoo theory may explain the lack of alien visitors. This is a really, really cool one article I've came across. A radio astronomer at MIT may have an explanation for why we have yet to be contacted by aliens. With the news that the U.S. government had actually been secretly conducting investigations into UFOs back in the 90s, interest in the topic of extraterrestrial visitation has been on the rise in recent weeks. But if we are being visited by aliens, where are they and why have they not made contact with us? One explanation for this lies in what we know as zoo theory, which was first put forward by MIT astronomer John A. Ball back in the 70s. Ball suggests that a sufficiently advanced alien civilization may merely prefer to observe our activities rather than to interfere or make their presence known. The idea likens to our planet to a wildlife sanctuary that should simply be left to its own devices. I suggest first that mankind is neither alone nor number one, he wrote. Advanced civilizations exist and exert some degree of control over the galaxy. Second, they're aware of us, at least at some level, but are they concerned with us? We may be only an obscure entry into their tabulation of inhabited regions of the galaxy. Third, we're unaware of them because either they want us to be unaware, they're hiding, but this means that they care about us, why bother to hide, or because we're not yet clever enough to know that they're there, but they don't care whether we know or not. So there you go. We're all just a bunch of dummies floating in space, apparently, according to that article. Well, that's kind of depressing. And I'm sure you saw the meme, you know, one does not simply walk into Mordor. Well, there's been an undersea Mordor found off the coast of Australia, so one does not simply scuba dive into Mordor? The Tolkien-esque landscape is made up of 26 underwater volcanoes buried beneath seabed sediment. This remarkable hidden realm was discovered by an international team of researchers using 3D seismic reflection, a geomapping technique that uses seismic waves to map the subsurface. The volcanoes themselves, which are surrounded by lava features never studied before underwater, are buried around 820 feet beneath the sediment on the sea floor. Scientists believe that they originally formed between 33 and 50 million years ago. The technology we have used is similar in many ways to what we have used to produce ultrasound images of babies, but for the Earth, said study author Nick Schofield of the University of Aberdeen. By using this technique, we have a unique insight into a landscape that has remained hidden for millions of years. The network of lava flows surrounding the volcanoes, which are collectively known as the Bright Basin Igneous Complex, were thought to have formed during an eruption 35 million years ago. Some of the largest flows measure more than 21 miles long and 9 miles high. That's insanely huge. That's, yes, it is Mordor. That's nuts. Yeah, you know, I just can't stop thinking of little hobbits with their, you know, little scuba gear on and their little hairy feet. And, oh, God, it's just adorable. Speaking of hairy feet, you know, hairy feet walking across the land. How about hairy wings walking across the land? This is a weird story, and I'm going to have to go with this one. A giant extinct bat on Earth in New Zealand. The giant burrowing bat not only flew, but also scurried around on the forest floor looking for food. Discovered by an international team of researchers led by the University of New South Wales, the fossilized remains of this prehistoric winged mammal date back to 19 million years. Scientists have named this species Vulcanops jennyworthiae, a reference to Vulcan, the Roman god of fire and volcanoes, as well as Jennyworthy, the team member who discovered the fossils. Burrowing bats are unusual because, unlike most bats, they prefer to scurry around on all fours and forage for food under leaf litter and along tree branches. Burrowing bats are more closely related to bats living in South America than to others in Southwest Pacific, said study author Professor Sue Hand. They are related to vampire bats, ghost-faced bats, fishing and frog-eating bats, the nectar-feeding bats, and belong to a bat superfamily that once spanned the southern land masses of Australia, New Zealand, South America, and even possibly Antarctica. We're still not sure. And a very simple little tweet went out. Bones from a prehistoric burrowing bat three times the size of those currently living in New Zealand has been found in Otago in New Zealand. Really, really cool. And you know I love animal stories, so anything prehistoric, anything dinosaurs, I'm a Jurassic Mark. And you know any wrestling fan will get that right away. Okay. So, speaking of Jurassic Park, you know, great movies, love them, love Jurassic World, the second installment is coming out soon enough, and it makes you kind of wonder how close we are to the end of the world, because let's be honest, we must be getting closer. Well, unfortunately, this January, the Doomsday Clock did move forward again for 30 seconds, the possibility of nuclear war was pushed the doomsday clock one more step closer to midnight. The symbolic clock, which has been maintained by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists since 1947, is a visual representation of how close the world is to disaster based on political, environmental, and technological threats such as nuclear annihilation and climate change. Last year, the hands were moved to show 2.5 minutes to midnight, their most precarious position the clock has been in since the risk of nuclear war conflict during the Cold War. Now the hands have been moved yet again, leaving the time on the clock to 2 minutes to midnight. The danger of nuclear conflagration is not only the reason the clock has been moved forward, says theoretical physicist Lawrence Cross. The danger looms at a time when there's been a loss of trust in political institutions, in the media, in science, and in fact, themselves, all of which exacerbate the difficulty of dealing with real problems and world faces. So that's not good. There's actually a hashtag going around on Twitter called Rewind the Doomsday Clock. And it's 2 minutes closer to midnight now. Read about what's going on. You can always check that out online. But not good news. Not good news at all. You might turn to the cloth, actually, at this stage in the game and become a monk. Well, that doesn't mean you might get off easy, because you might still hang around after you're gone. This has gone viral. Probably one of the bigger stories this last month. I'm not sure if it actually came out last month or not. I can't find the correct date, but, it came to my desk, so to speak, halfway through January, and I wanted to bring this guy's up because this is awesome. A ghost of a monk has been spotted at a medieval castle. A photograph taken at Ensford Castle in Kent, England, appears to show a mysterious cloaked figure. John Wicks had been visiting the medieval castle with his 12-year-old son to help him out with a history homework assignment when something showed up in one of his photographs. The anomalous figure, which neither of them had noticed at the time the picture was taken, appears to be dressed in a large hooded cloak and looks quite a bit like a medieval monk. Intriguingly, there have been sightings of a ghostly monk at the castle before, and in 1130, William de Ensford, who held the castle for the Archbishops of Canterbury, allegedly retired to become, get this, a monk. I'm not sure if it's a ghost or not, said Wicks. I'm never really freaked out by that sort of stuff. Everyone who's seen it is interested because it does look a whole lot like a monk, and because they may think it is a ghost, there's no doubt. And I want you guys to jump online and check this out. Look up ghostly black monk who appears in picture, and just look up, medieval castle or Ensford. Ensford is E-Y-N-S-Ford, F-O-R-D, castle in Kent, England. Very, very creepy, very, very strange, and it's there, man. It's creepy. Go check it out. Guys, I hope you enjoyed your paranormal news. I hope you're enjoying it while you're eating your discount chocolates, because let's be honest, if you download this on the 15th of February, it's the cheapest time of year to get chocolate after Christmas. And or maybe you're cuddled up, listen to the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast with the one you love. Just know that every single one of these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
Thanks, John. I would like to welcome you to your MUFON Minute for February 2018. Happy Valentine's Day, one and all. For December, MUFON's latest stats list that the United States had 507 reports and Canada had another 59. With regards to the shapes that have been sighted, the top five are as follows. For spherical objects, there was 117 reports. For not applicable reports, there were 76. Triangular shapes made up 68 reports. Circular shapes made up 67. And disc made up another 60 of these reports. Of all the reports in MUFON's system, it is interesting to note that of those reported in December, 122 were actually less than 100 feet from the witness. All these stats are available to MUFON members and are available through email. I wanted to share a very special story with you for this month of love, and it actually happened to me. This past month, I was driving home at approximately 5 p.m. on the Outer Ring Road. I was driving west. I was between Allendale Road and Team Guju Highway. In preparation to pass, I did my shoulder check, knowing how busy this highway is, and I noticed, importantly, that nothing was coming. Then I saw an aircraft at approximately 45 degrees in the air. But there was something else. Approximately 5 degrees below the aircraft, I saw something else, another object. The object produced a beautiful prism of rainbows, sparkling in a gorgeous stream of colors. And then poof, it was gone, it departed. On a gray, foggy day in St. John's, this was most certainly notable. I immediately pulled over. I racked my brain. What could this be? This is the first time that something like this had happened to me. It was between my car and Signal Hill, so approximately 1 kilometer away, say. There didn't appear to be much movement. It was only a split second that I had seen these glorious colors from the heavens. But that's when it dawned on me. What was dangling from my head? But beautiful, tan-beaded earrings, featuring none other than a beautiful crystal smack dab in the center. Large ones. Big old dinglers. When I tried to recreate what I had experienced, sure enough, the driving lights of the cars behind me caused this beautiful vision to reappear on my driver's side. This is a little reminder for those who are interested in UFO investigations and those who are studying to be field investigators that, for most things, there are logical explanations. Sometimes it takes a little hunting. Sometimes it takes a little creative thinking. Even though I would have loved to see an actual UFO, I'd love to see one in my life. Most often there are explanations and conventional reasons for what we are actually seeing. That being said, if you have ever seen anything fishy in our skies, please be sure to report it to www.mufon.com. For more information about MUFON and Newfoundland and Labrador, please be sure to check out the Newfoundland UFO Network on Facebook. Thanks, John, and happy Valentine's Day.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddities.
All right, folks, it's time for Oddities. 10 strange facts about a very strange world that are very, very true. And, you know, since Valentine's Day is coming up, makes only sense for us to present 10 weird facts about, well, Valentine's Day. Number one, Valentine's Day started as a form of rebellion. The most popular theory about Valentine's Day origins is the Emperor Claudius II didn't want Roman men marrying during wartime. Saint Valentine went against his wishes and performed secret weddings, which means this day was originally founded by an act of rebellion. Pretty cool, huh? Kind of romantic, actually. Number two, signing your messages with a kiss is nothing new. Typing a long line of kisses at the end of a message is something many of us do, but while you may associate it most with the modern text era, this little symbol actually has a much longer history. Some think that the cute X symbol became synonymous with the kiss in medieval times, when very few individuals could write and would end each of their letters with an X embossed in wax or ink to show their sincerity. This evolved to represent the kiss, and the rest is history. We're not sure who decided to add O symbols to represent hugs, but we're pretty sure it happened a fair bit later. That's really interesting. And you know I love you guys for downloading this podcast, XOXOXO. Not all Valentines are chosen on purpose. Receive a Valentine today, and it's a sign that someone has a secret crush on you. Go back to the Middle Ages, though, and the situation is a little different. Back then, young men and women drew names from a bowl to see who would be their valentine. The single women's names would be added to an urn, and single men of the town would take a name out and pin it to their sleeves for one whole week. This would allow everyone in the town to see who their valentine was and could be where the term wearing your heart on your sleeve actually originates from. I think that's so cool. That's so interesting, and it's one of my favorite little things to say about people, because I definitely wear my heart on my sleeve. Number four, nearly three-quarters of men will buy flowers on Valentine's Day. Yours truly included. While it is hardly surprising that more men buy flowers on Valentine's Day than women, it may shock you to learn just how many men pick up a bouquet. Around 73% of men will buy flowers on the big day, while just over only a quarter, 27% of women, will do the same. Come on, ladies, get with it. Number five. Red roses have been associated with love since ancient Rome. We're all aware that the red rose is a common purchase around the time of Valentine's Day, but why? Roses, and red ones in particular, have become a symbol of love and are therefore heavily connected with the day. The origin of this tradition stretches as far back as ancient Rome, when the red rose was the favorite flower of the Venus, the goddess of love. Number 6. Juliet. You know, Romeo and Juliet's Juliet still gets love letters sent to her on Valentine's Day. William Shakespeare's most famous romance, Romeo and Juliet, has captured the hearts for decades of people, so much so that Juliet still receives love letters on Valentine's Day. Every year, the city of Verona in Italy, where the play was set, receives around 1,000 letters addressed to Juliet. Not bad for someone who's been dead for hundreds of years. Oh, happy dagger. You don't have to be lovers to celebrate Valentine's Day as number 7. While Valentine's Day is most commonly associated with lovers and couples, that doesn't mean singletons can't celebrate the occasion too. In fact, one country has gone on and has transformed the occasion to Friends Day instead. On February 14th, Finland celebrates Ystävänpäivä, which is celebrated and translated as Friends Day. Forget the romantic undertones, gifting cards are given and received, but by friends rather than lovers. We think it's a great way to involve, you know, everyone, unless, you know, you're really lonely and don't have a whole lot of friends like me. Huh. It's kind of depressing. Moving on. Did you know, number 8, by the way, Henry VIII decided when Valentine's Day should be celebrated, marrying a total of 6 women throughout his lifetime. There's no denying Henry VIII was a big fan of women, and probably a rather big romance. But did you know he is responsible for when we actually celebrate Valentine's Day? Back in 1537, King Henry declared by royal charter that Valentine's Day would be a public holiday, chose February 14th as the official day of celebration, and marked it down. There you go. It's all Henry's fault. Number 9. Women buy most of the Valentine's gifts, even the ones for themselves. Want to make sure you get what you want this Valentine's Day? Well, buy it yourself. A massive 85% of all gifts for Valentine's Day are bought by women, which means a lot of us are picking up our own treats. Well, it beats getting lumbered with a tacky ornament we don't like, you know, lame stuff. So there you go. You might as well pick up your own thing. Number 10. You know who really cashes in on Valentine's Day? This might come as a shock. You think it'd probably be like mothers, you know, and grandmas. You know, they'd be, you know, hey, I got all these kids, and yeah, we're going to cash in. Or maybe someone who's really, really promiscuous and has like 25 boyfriends. Trust me, I dated a few girls like that back in the day. But you know what? Teachers. Yeah, teachers. They receive the most Valentine's Day cards. Number 10, here it is for your oddities this month. Valentine's cards are big news for those of school age, but surprisingly, it is teachers, not pupils, who stand to benefit the most. Teachers generally receive the largest number of Valentine's Day cards, with children, mothers, wives, and pets. Yes, I said pets, as in your pet dog and cat, filling the rest of the top 5 recipients list. Oh my God. Well, let me just put this out there. You know what? This is cool. I think teachers deserve it. I think it's a wonderful thing. And, you know, there's probably a lot of teachers who listen to my podcast because, let's be honest, teachers are awesome. But there's one thing that scares me. I'm reading this and I'm seeing Valentine's Day cards for children, mothers, wives, and pets. Children, mothers, wives, and pets. And teachers, obviously, on the list. There's nothing there for husbands. There's nothing there for boyfriends. There's nothing there for men. Like, it's so not right. I hereby decree the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast would be the perfect gift to get your mister, whether he's your husband, your boyfriend, and, you know, if he gets annoyed by loud, obnoxious people, this would be great for your ex-boyfriend, too. Just share the show. Guys, it's time to check in with our guest. Don't you dare go away.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Tonight, I have a returning guest. Someone who's actually been on my show before.
Many, many years ago, I had her on during the Mother's Day special with an old friend, of course, Melissa Martinellis, by my side. But, you know, this guest, she's very dear to me. She is a true friend, a fellow podcaster as well. And, you know, since it's Valentine's Day very soon, which just so happens to be my birthday, okay, just throwing that out there, just because it's kind of close to Valentine's Day, I thought it was just so suiting to have the voice behind Paranormal Heart on tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, my oldest and dearest podcasting friend, Kat Ward, joins us tonight. Kat, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, love. How you doing?
I'm doing even better. Look at you. Look at you.
Amazing. I know,
right? Like a couple of years ago, Kat came on my show and was the first podcast she was ever on.
Yep.
And now she's like got this show now. And more people listen to her show to listen to mine.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know. Definitely on YouTube, though. Good for you. And I'm just so... Your success is my success. There's no doubt. For everyone listening at home right now, I just want to throw it out there to you guys. This will be a two-part episode of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast / Paranormal Heart Podcast. This is actually going to be a two-parter. We're going to release this first part on the 1st of February. And then the second part will be on February what, Kat?
February 25th.
And you'll have to head over to Paranormal Heart, hopefully subscribe on the 1st of February when you guys are listening to this show, and have to wait with bated breath for the second half of the show, because let me tell you, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, Kat, gonna stop the advertising now and just say, how you been? How you feeling today? You doing all right or what?
Yes, I'm doing good.
Okay. All right. I hope so. I'm gonna edit out that part, don't worry. I did. No, I'm not at all. Okay. So
I was gonna say we laughed because I had a little bit of wine last night and it didn't really agree with me, so yeah, I'm doing good though.
But listen, it's so close to Valentine's Day, a lot of people are gonna be eating too much chocolate and drinking way too much wine. And, you know, right? I know particularly me, it was way too much beer when I was single. So there you go. Kat, where are you to right now in the world? I know you moved recently. Where do you live to now?
I'm in Alberta.
Alberta. And, you know, I complain about how cold it is here in Newfoundland. It's like minus 10 Celsius here sometimes. Apparently, I'm just a big sook compared to you. What's those temperatures like out your way?
Now it's not too bad. It's minus 15 Celsius, so it's not too bad. But for, it seemed like an eternity, it would be like in the minus 30s, feeling like minus 40s.
Man,
it was brutal.
That's crazy.
The air hurt to breathe, Johnny. The air hurt.
Are you sure it wasn't a ghost trying to make his way in?
Well, maybe. The ghosts were freezing so you could feel them.
Of course, Kat, not only is she a fellow podcaster, but she is also a fellow ghost hunter. I'm pretty much retired from the old ghost hunting shtick, but, you know, I'm glad to know that there's still somebody out there like Kat who's still doing it. Kat, tell me a little tiny bit about some of the investigations you've been on over the last year.
Actually, I've only done the one. I haven't been doing an awful lot since we moved to Alberta, but I have a team here, a small one. They're great. There's this hotel in the area. back in 1929, there was a big fire, wiped out most of the town. It even wiped out the fire marshal's house. I believe it was also the fire hall went up. It was horrible. And so when they rebuilt the hotel, they were thinking, well, instead of redoing it in wood, bear in mind 1929, they're going to do something that's logistically almost impossible for the time, because we're in the middle of nowhere pretty much. So they decided to go with continuous poured concrete, which was, you know, logistically must have been a nightmare, must have been expensive to try and bring that in. So they rebuilt it. And I've had people approach me after they find out what I do and tell me they think the place is haunted. We've had the local haunted house for 2 years in a row at Halloween, which the first year we were here, my husband and I went to check out the haunted house, and I thought, oh my God, this is great. I have to be a part of it. Contacted the guy and said, look, I want to help. So for the past two Halloweens, my daughter, husband, and I, we went and helped out. We actually had our own little room to scare people. We dressed up, and it was a lot of fun. But, you know, as you're setting up the building for the old hotel, you can definitely tell there's something there.
Yeah, it's almost like a sixth sense, so to speak. You know, we walk into these areas and these buildings, and you just kind of feel it just in your soul. I've been to places people have sworn up and down are haunted and felt nothing. And I've gone to other places people have sworn up and down they're haunted, and I'm like, wow, there really is something going on here. It feels freaking weird.
Yeah, well, the building is gutted because they're going to be renovating the building, and it's going to cost, I can't remember if it's like $1.8 million just to bring the building up to code. So the whole building's gutted. There's no wires. There's no plumbing. There's nothing. So perfect place to do investigation because you're not going to have any interference in your equipment. At least you hope. you kind of hope you do, actually, because then you pretty much but something's going on. But as we're setting up the hotel to investigate the hotel, fresh pack of batteries, trying to put it into my voice recorder, the batteries aren't working. I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, okay, take another battery. Same thing. And I went through three, maybe four batteries from the pack. Same thing. It wasn't working. Mm-hmm. I had to actually use my cell phone. And as you know, I don't really like using cell phones during investigations because I find the cell phone emits just too much interference for, you know, other equipment. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to have to use my cell to do the voice recording. So we go downstairs in the basement, and that's where the laundry room used to be. The old boiler room is there. Again, no plumbing, nothing. I have a motion detector. We have it in one section of the basement where we're not even at. And of course, it's going off. Super excited because I've used it in a few investigations. I've only seen it go off one other time before. And let me tell you, we're all very excited. But I have a FLIR as well. And that kept turning off on me. So we couldn't get any images, no thermal imaging on that because it kept shutting off, which was kind of disappointing. But so the only thing we really had were photos. Nothing came up on the photos. Excuse me. The video recorder kept turning off too, and it was fully charged when we got there. So there were some funky things going on. So it's a three-story building. We get to the third story. The closer to the back of the building that we got, the more EMF we were getting. It was just lighting up like a Christmas tree. And at first we're thinking, oh, wow, this is amazing. One room in particular. So we're thinking, great, there's got to be something here. I look out the window and I realize the power lines are outside, 8 to 10 feet away from the building. And right up against the building, there's a metal fire escape staircase. So of course, the power line's not being grounded and you've got a big hunk of metal there. What are you going to pick up? You're going to pick up EMF. So that part was kind of disappointing because we figured out why we were getting such high EMF. But it's just certain sensations that the team were getting in the building. Like one lady kept saying something's just touched me, or motion sensor was going off in various rooms. It was exciting, but we didn't get the evidence that we were hoping for on our equipment.
How would you feel about me jumping on a plane and coming and investigating with you?
Come on down. Get to meet too.
Lucky for you, I'm a total cheapskate. So as long as I can totally crash on your couch, I'm bringing all my audio equipment.
That would be great. Well, I was actually thinking, geez, I need someone who specializes in EVPs. And I'm like, Johnny, why couldn't you be closer?
I'm so sorry. But unfortunately, my life these days have got me more concerned with the living than the dead. I'll be honest.
Yep. But You're busy.
I'm a busy, busy man, but I'm glad you still made time for me today. And let me tell you, it makes me so happy to hear that you're still doing what you do and you love to do. So speaking of loving what you do, tell me a little bit about Paranormal Heart. Like, how did this all begin? Like, I know you took a very long chunk of your time to prepare to do this podcast. You know, a lot of people jump into podcasts, and I remember, you know, this time last year, I jumped on Facebook and said, you know, I wish people wouldn't just jump into a podcast. I wish people would prepare themselves so you don't just do one episode and quit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And much to the chagrin of a lot of people who actually did that on Facebook, and well, that's okay. We'll leave it there. But the reality is you took a nice chunk of time to come up with your ideas and stuff like that, and now it's taken off. So you did the right thing, no doubt about it. Tell me a little bit about Paranormal Heart. Like, just tell me how that all came about.
Well, it took me a little over a year to actually go from my idea to actually making it a reality. Because if you remember, when you wanted to interview me on your show, I was terrified. And I kept saying, I don't know, let me think about it, let me think about it. And you kept hounding me. Okay, are we doing this? Are we doing this? So I was like, okay, fine, we'll do it. I was totally terrified. And after doing your interview, I did a couple of others. And some people were saying, you know, you should start your own podcast. And my response every time was, hell no. So when I mentioned it to my husband, he says, well, why don't you? So I'm like, I don't know. It's because it's something that other people do, not me. And he goes, well, why not? Just think about it. So I thought about it. You know, you were the first person. I'm like, hey, Johnny, what do you think? Should I start a podcast? Like, and you're like, well, why wouldn't you? And I was like, well, I don't know. So again, took over a year because I really didn't know how to go about it. I was the tech side. I'm still having little heart issues with editing. Thankfully, I have really good friends helping me out. With editing and stuff like that. And I'm slowly getting there. But the reason why I wanted to start the show is Paranormal Heart is mainly for people who have a love of the paranormal, but because we're caring as well. Because you know as well as I do that when someone's going through paranormal experiences, it can be very, very traumatizing. And they don't want to talk to their family. They don't want to talk to their friends because they think they're crazy. And, you know, nope, I got to keep it to myself. I really didn't see it. And it can be really, it can take a toll on a person. So I wanted to start a show where people could actually call, talk about their experiences, and they don't have to fear that they're being judged. I'm not going to criticize them. I want to hear their stories.
Maybe we should have called it the Unbiased Ear. Damn. Well, I'm glad it came to fruition. Jeez, Kat, where'd you get such a catchy name to?
I don't know. I have to say, folks, Johnny came up with the name.
Okay, well, we got to tell the history the way it really happened. What was Kat decided she wanted to start a Facebook group about the paranormal, and I suggested Paranormal Heart because she's just when I think of Kat, I think of paranormal, and I think of someone who has a huge heart. So I said, this is a brilliant idea. And then, like, a few months later, she's like, I'm starting my podcast. Do you mind if I call it Paranormal Heart? I'm like, why wouldn't you call it? That's brilliant. So there you go.
So it kind of grew from there.
Yeah. I'm so proud of you because I know that you're an awesome person to talk to. I mean, me and you just burned up 13 minutes, and we haven't even really weighed in on anything paranormal yet. Like, we're halfway through our interview, and all we've talked about is really the history of Paranormal Heart. So let's just stop there. Everything's going great in your world. I'm proud of you. I think it's wonderful. But it's time to get some heavy hitters out here. Let's talk about some various paranormal subjects. So we're going to start with something that's very dear and near to both of our hearts, which is ghost hunting. How do you feel about ghost hunting right now and where it's to in culture and stuff like that?
Oh, it can be kind of touchy because there's a lot of drama out there. You want everybody to be able to share knowledge and be supportive of each other. So far, that's all I've found. I'm lucky.
Very, very lucky.
I know I'm on the other side of the spectrum and will be affecting me at some point. I'm not that naive to think otherwise, but.
Now, remember what your cousin always says. It's all about positive thought, right?
Yes, exactly.
Shout out to who?
Patricia LeBlanc.
Madame LeBlanc, we miss you. Keep going.
No, it's kind of nice to see, though, that a lot more people are open to the paranormal. More people are investigating, but I kind of wish that people wouldn't just jump into investigating because it can be different. Not different, but dangerous as well, because sometimes you don't even know what you're dealing with. You might have entities that one person was going to have a good experience with, and another person, just the way they're asking questions, the entity does not like it, and they might attack them, and they're going to think it's demonic. Well, not necessarily. If somebody came into my house and said, hey, how's it going? I'm like, oh, hey, you know, want a cup of tea? But if someone comes in and says, hey, are you here? What's your name? I'm going to be kind of agitated, right? So I think you have to kind of watch your approach on investigating.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, so we got ghost hunting off the checklist. Check. How about our good buddy Eric Altman's passion? Ha ha. How about the big guy, the hairy man, the mountain man, the Sam Squanch, as Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys calls him?
Yeah,
what's your thought about Bigfoot?
I don't know. know. I think something's out there. Being in Alberta, the family and I in September drove to Jasper, and I was reading up on Sasquatch sightings, and there was this, just last year, there was actually a Sasquatch sighting. I can't remember the name of the community. Right after I finished reading that, do I not see a sign with that community name? And I look at my husband, I said, holy crap. And he says, what? So I told him. It's like, okay, fine. Driving on the highway, forest on either side of the highway. And all of a sudden my daughter goes, that's weird. So we look, and just on the edge of the forest, off the side of the highway, there's this dead horse, and there's a huge chunk taken out of its hindquarters. And I don't know what can take down a horse like that. It just didn't look like a normal, like, cougar attack or something, you know. And I just thought that was really, really strange. I just finished reading about Sasquatch sightings in that particular area, and there's a horse. I've never seen a horse on the side of a road before.
Man, that's the craziest thing. Like, what? Am I ever glad I asked that question? That's an insane story. Why haven't you told me about this already?
I don't know. There's a friend of mine who also he's been investigating Sasquatch for over 40 years, Will Jevning, and I sent him an email and I told him about the situation. I said, I've been trying to find out what happened to that darn horse. Everywhere is on the internet and I cannot find anything. So I was kind of hoping he would kind of dig into it, and haven't heard back from him, but yeah, that was really, really odd. It's like, honey, put the pedal to the metal. Let's get to our destination. I don't want to be here.
It's funny you should mention Will. I'm actually trying to get him on the show right now. I almost had him around Christmas time, but, you know, some time stuff kind of messed up on us both. So
yeah.
I'm hoping to have him on sometime this year. And once again, I'll definitely bring that up to him. You know, is it common for a Bigfoot to be attacking other large mammals? Is it common?
Yeah.
And or did the horse die and something else scavenge it? And could, you know, Bigfoot be known to do that? Because it's that's a really interesting thing to kind of bring up to him, too. You know what I mean? All right.
Yeah.
Here's my checklist. So we got ghosts, check. Bigfoot, check. Ding. Okay. Ding. We're both from Canada. This has got to happen. You know I'm going to say it. Here it comes. Ogopogo. Or there's a lot of people like Loch Ness Monster. What are your thoughts on really river monsters or lake monsters in general? Do you think it's possible? Do you think there's, you know, maybe a lake in the world that these things actually could be living in? And what do you think they might be?
I think so. Actually, I have been to the Okanagan Valley, and I've been on fishing at Ogopogo's home with my grandparents because they used to live in that area, and they were telling me stories about a doctor that they knew, they were friends with. Him and his wife were out fishing one time with some friends, and they claimed to have seen it. And, you know, they said that this friend of theirs doesn't just say stories, you know, I saw this, and just to say stories. If he saw something and he mentioned it, he must have seen something. So not, I've never spoken to the doctor myself, but it's very, very interesting. It just seems to be so many lakes have creatures in them. And I really do think there might be something there, because we can't really go down very deep to see how deep it goes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's very little the ocean's actually explored, actually. And, you know, rightfully so. I mean, only within the last year or so do we actually get a picture of a real sea monster, which is the Kraken or giant squid. So it's really, you know, you're right on there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, like, every one of these questions I ask you, you have, like, a paranormal story. This is amazing. We're, like, 3 for 3 here.
Just happened to be in the right area.
Jumping Jehoshaphat. All right. I'm going to bring up number 4, and you know, this, you probably knew this was coming anyway, because I got to count down the list of all my favorite cryptids, but, you know, the Loup Garou is close to your heart. I happen to remember that very dearly, and, you know, what's your thoughts on, you know, some people call him Dogman, but, you know, me, it's always going to be werewolf. What do you think?
Yeah, I've been asking a lot of people who have been studying cryptids, and ask them, do you think Loup Garou and werewolves and dogmen are all the same creature? And they all think that it is, which excites me and scares the heck out of me at the same time. Because, you know, in Canada, there's a lot of wooded areas. You know, growing up in the Maritimes, that's when I first heard about the Loup Garou. I didn't hear about werewolves at first. I heard about Loup Garou. Actually, I think it might have been an episode of Scooby-Doo. They were in Quebec, and they were talking about it. So, there's something out there, because there's so many people talking about the sightings that they've had, and they all seem to be very similar.
Yeah, that's great too. You know, I had to bring up Luke Guru because I remember when I did the O Canada episode, you know, yep. You know, the Canadian Odyssey episode way back in July. I had Lou Guru on that episode, and I pretty much put it in there for you. So, I actually had the radio play that I listened to back in like grade 5 because I did French immersion in class. So,
yeah,
it's interesting. Anyhow, moving on. You know, let's start talking a little bit more about the weirdness that is us as human beings. You know, there's so many different phenomena. What's your feelings on, you know, the psychic or mediumship? How do you feel about that stuff? Do you think there's something to it?
Definitely.
Me too.
Well, for example, just my personal experience, the other day a girl at work said she went for a reading at this local psychic and she gave me her card. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. And all of a sudden I just stopped. I'm holding the card and I looked at her and said, does she have reddish blonde hair? She goes, yeah, you know her? I'm like, no, I've never heard of her before. She goes, how'd you know she had that color hair? I'm like, I don't know. It just came to me. I've had an experience before where I'm driving in my hometown in New Brunswick. And I'm going a little faster than I'm supposed to. And all of a sudden, I jam on the brakes, and everybody in the car with me going, what are you doing? It's like, I don't know. I just swear I saw this guy cross the street walking his bike. He was wearing white sneakers, jeans, and a white T-shirt, and he had glasses and short hair. And they're all looking at me like, okay, like, there's nobody there. So we go around the bend. Who is crossing the street? The guy of the description that I just gave. So if I wouldn't have slowed down or stopped like that, I would have hit him.
Wow.
Yeah. And I saw him just as plain as day. Like, I thought he was there. I jammed on the brakes. And my friends are just looking at me going, whoa. So, yeah, I definitely do believe.
That's, you know, it's interesting to have that, you know, that actual experience to kind of back up what you believe is going on. You know what I mean? And, you know, realistically, until we can take a USB and plug it into the back of someone who claims to be psychic's mind, okay, until we can hook them up to a computer and test it, we'll never know. And realistically, I'm sure you probably agree with me on this one. It just seems to me like the model that science has, that scientific method, you know, it's great for things that are physical, but when it comes to things that are metaphysical, it just doesn't make any sense. There's nothing to measure. Yeah. There's nothing to weigh. I mean, the closest thing you can do is get repeatable data. So, I mean, we got people who, I've had psychics on my show who have an incredibly high accuracy rate. So, I mean, I think of Tane Ahoy, an old, I mean, that guy predicted absolutely everything. He predicted, in private with me, he predicted the gender of my foster child, who I hadn't gotten yet, some of his medical issues, some of the things surrounding his birth. He also predicted that he'll be going home, you know, sometime in March.
Yeah.
He predicted all that stuff, right? And everything was accurate. Absolutely. It blew my mind. Like, it turned me from a skeptic to a believer. And he was like, what you're doing is incredible, you know, because a foster child was something that was just a crazy jump for me anyway. But he's like, this is definitely planned. It was planned by the stars. And he's like, man, like, he's going home around March, around there. And I had no idea. And, of course, when we got the referral, it said 6 to 8 months from September, which is March. So it blew my mind, right? I think there's definitely something to that. I think there's a lot of shysters out there. There's no doubt.
Oh, definitely.
But there's definitely something to it. I'm glad we both had an experience with that, right? There's no doubt. Okay. So we weighed in a lot of different topics. I love that kind of stuff, right?
Me too.
So the next question is, what's next for Cat Ward? Where are you heading to, man? Like, I know that your ghost hunting thing is going on, your podcast thing is going on. Like, are you going to continue doing both? Are you going to focus more on one? Are you going to, I don't know, hand the reins to somebody else? Like, what's your plan?
I don't know. We're moving. It looks like we might be moving back to Ontario sometime in the summer. We're not quite sure yet. If we do, it's going to be the same location. It'll be the Ottawa Valley. The team that I was with before, Canadian Supernatural Research Society, lead investigator Katie Turner, she's excited that we're going back, wants me to join the team again. So I don't know if I just want to concentrate on the podcast and maybe do a little bit of investigating as well. I'm mainly going to concentrate on the podcast for right now, and I'll see how it goes once we move.
Yeah, and that's great. Sometimes the universe kind of lines up for you to do those things, you know what I mean?
Indeed,
Like you felt in your heart that you had to make a move on that hotel, Kat. You really did. And you went out of your way to make it all happen, and you had some wonderful experiences. But now it's kind of like the world saying, okay, time to focus on the podcast. I can relate to that. I just don't have time anymore to dump so much time into recorders. Like, my God.
Yeah, like, can you remember another thing too.
Can you remember the month of 1,000 hours I told you about?
Oh, yeah.
I logged 1,000 hours in 1 month listening to audio recorders, and I thought I was going to lose my mind.
How did your ears not bleed? Because you're
oh, my God, I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking, but thank God some of them are still working, so I guess I'll ask you some more questions.
Sure.
You know, Kat, me and you have had conversations at length. We'll go back to ghost hunting because I know this is one of your passions. You know, you talked to me at length about some of your own theories and stuff like that, but something that you've kind of focused on was infrasound. And I know I can remember you talking to me a few times about that online. Did you want to just throw out there what's going on with that? Because once again, that's not really my realm. But yeah, talk to me a little bit about what your research kind of gave you about infrasound and what you might think that has to do with hauntings.
Well, I didn't go into lots of research on the topic. Other, you know, life happened and I had to kind of put it aside for a bit. But what I did get was, it's so incredibly interesting because infrasound is, well, sound that we can't hear. You can feel it. Before a storm hits, animals start freaking out. They can sense the infrasound. Earthquakes, there's a few animals that can actually emit infrasound, you know, elephants, whales. But also man-made things. So if you have a fan, for example, that's not oscillating quite the way it should, it can actually emit infrasound. And it happens to be 20 hertz or below, which ironically, the human eye and the ear resonates at about 20 hertz. So you're on the same frequency. You're picking up the same information. So it can actually make humans see things from the corner of their eyes, like dark shadows, blobs. You can hear things, feel things. It can make you feel nauseous, anxious. You know, you think you're being watched. It's just amazing on what effects infrasound can actually have on the human body. And it can be something simple as an old radio. Even if you have an old panel in your house that, you know, you should probably check and get rewired. It's just, there's so many things that can emit infrasound. And I wanted to see if there was a correlation between paranormal experiences and infrasound. And some cases, yes, there is. I've heard of some cases where they've taken out an old lamp from somebody's bedroom because they were having really funky dreams and they thought they saw things. And as soon as the lamp was taken out, everything stopped because it was a really old lamp, old wires, you know. So I'm really, as soon as I get some more time, I really, really want to delve into that research again because it's really, really fascinating.
So not only do you have a paranormal heart, you also have a level paranormal mind, which is just wonderful. Guys, Kat Ward, her podcast is Paranormal Heart. I mean, do me a favor. Do me a little favor. If you're a subscriber to my show, jump on Podbean right now. Jump in there. Find Paranormal Heart. Find Kat Ward. And give her the good old handshake, so to speak. Drop her a like. And subscribe to her show. Because this is a two-parter. Yeah, man. This is part one. It's released on February 1st. But the second part is going to be released on February
25th.
There you go. At Paranormal Heart. And you guys can hear a little bit more on me as we turn the microphone over on me. Guys, once again, Kat Ward, Paranormal Heart, thanks so much for being on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Thanks for having me, love. I really appreciate it.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.